Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer. There's been a lot of hand-wringing lately over what a divided nation we must be, how partisan rhetoric and partisan battles have split us asunder. Conversely, there have also been plenty of calls for bipartisanship, for a more centrist approach that will unite us once again as a nation. Well, think again, says our guest this morning. Political scientist Georgia Sorensen reminds us that both candidates tried to pitch their campaign in the centrist camp. And she says, wasn't it the search for a happy medium that got us into this election mess in the first place? We'll find out more this morning as we talk to Georgia Sorensen. She's the co-author of Dead Center, Clinton-Gore Leadership and the Perils of Moderation. Georgia Sorensen joins us by phone. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hi.
Now, how did the search for a happy medium land us where we are today?
Well, I think about 15 years ago, there was an effort by people in the Democratic Leadership Council and others on the Republican side to pitch the idea of the center as being a moderate place, a place of independent thinkers, a place of compromise and conciliation. I think people were tired of the bipartisan rancoring, and there was an effort to pitch the middle as a safe and comforting and independent place, but I think that's wrong.
Why?
Because what we're showing in studies is that ever since congressional candidates and presidential candidates have pitched their messages to the center, the public itself has become more and more apathetic, and I think that there's a correlation between followership and leadership, frankly.
Well, now, I'm confused. How can conciliation, consensus, and centrism lead to some of the worst partisanship we've seen?
Well, I think we've seen in this election that the election is literally cloven down the middle, and we have an equally divided Senate, and we have an almost divided House, and even if you look at the state legislatures, they're divided 16 and 16, and I think that this is not an accident. I think that campaign consultants have calibrated the center of the population in order to win the election. Of course, people understand that, but when you do that, it's very difficult to govern from the center because there is not passion among swing voters. Swing voters are folks that are easily influenced by messages and have not stopped to really evaluate what their core positions or values are as people.
You said in an opinion piece recently that the legal wrangling, this month of lawsuits and recounts that we've seen, actually makes sense that it happened in this election year. What did you mean by that?
Because I think Bill Clinton in particular was the master of using triangulation and center strategies to win an election. And we talked to him shortly before he had been elected in 1992, and he talked about running beyond party, you know, beyond left and right, trying to find a group of people in the middle somewhere who might want to push his agenda forward. But what he found was that when he didn't run with people and ideas that have long traditionally defined both positions in this country, but he didn't have very much support in the middle. It was very soft. And that made it very difficult to lead.
Well, how do you define a centrist anyway?
Well, I say a centrist is basically, the more I studied centrism, the more I saw it as a really American phenomenon. And by that I mean the great American philosophy of pragmatism, which is finding ways to make incremental step-by-step progress, but without adhering to any core values or ideology. And I think that's very dangerous.
Well, talk for a minute about what concerns you about leaders who hug the middle of the road. Because I think what's interesting here is to see how centrism, which I think so many of us have been trained to think of as a good thing, how it can actually lead to even more partisanship.
Well, I think Minnesotans are great examples of citizens who have taken strong positions on issues and not necessarily even in the formal parties. And I think that centrism brings out the worst in all of us, and I think that it creates apathy among followership. It's not so much that it's a problem with leaders so much. Everybody would want incremental progress, you know, in the face of nothing. I mean, obviously, incremental progress is better than nothing. But when you think about the great, great leaders, like Roosevelt, for example, or Lincoln, or others, Wilson, they had bold positions, which they didn't always win on, but they mobilized people. They mobilized social movements. They mobilized the opposition. They created a climate where people participated and where issues were discussed. And I think we're really missing that.
We're talking to Georgia Sorensen. She's the co-author of Dead Center, Clinton Gore Leadership and the Perils of Moderation. She's a senior scholar at the James McGregor Burns Academy of Leadership at the University of Maryland. We're talking to her about centrism. Now, there are many who deplore the high level of partisanship that we're seeing in this post-election wrangling. But one of the points she's making is it's that middle-of-the-road politics got us to this mess in the first place. We'd like to know if you think if centrism is bad for this nation. Don't most of us like being a centrist? You tell us. 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Talk for a minute. It sounds like you think that both Bush and Gore pitched their campaign messages to the same group of independents in the middle.
Well, they had to create a 51% majority to win the election, but my question is, why do they pitch it dead center instead of a center-left or a center-right pitch? Because you can get 51% any number of ways, and I think the partisanship that you're talking about only really began to emerge toward the very end of the election when the candidates were seen as so indistinguishable that they had to distinguish themselves by more traditional right or left positions.
But what about the Al Gore of the Democratic Convention? Boy, I mean, there was a lot of talk about how he was pitching to the traditional left. He was trying to come off as a populist. He was trying to woo some of the progressives back.
Yeah, and if you look at the polling around then, his polls were much stronger when he had strong positions which people could identify with, and it got weaker when he had to move back toward the center.
But the conventional wisdom was he couldn't move, I mean, he couldn't win without the center.
Well, I do believe you need 51% to win, unless this election proves us all wrong, of course. But I do think that it's a mistake to think that you have to find your 51% dead in the middle, because the middle is basically an area of apathy, and I think it's unfortunate that victors have been sold this idea that it's an independent or moderate place to be. You have to have, there's no moderate position on the death penalty, for example. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a compromise between, favoring or disfavoring the death penalty? There really isn't one, or abortion, or any of the other issues, gun control. There are some issues that lend themselves toward finding a good compromise, but there are many, many core issues that do not.
Wasn't a move to the center how Clinton got elected not only once but twice, and he continually got high job approval ratings?
Well, he had very high popularity ratings, but I think the presidential historians and scholars that are looking at him and looking at his presidency are seeing that it was really a major missed opportunity. It wasn't that he did nothing, he did a lot, but that he did so little in the face of so many big problems with so much money. That's the question I'm talking about.
Let's go to Randy in Minneapolis. Randy, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning, and thanks for having me on the phone here.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the question I have is I'm really have a lot of centrist views. I just am wondering if your view, being different, must be different than a centrist, if that has, anything to do with your opinion on centrist views not being where they should be. I really like that in a presidential election in the participants a little bit more than when it's so much to the right and so much to the left.
Well, I would ask you to think very carefully about what you mean by having centrist points of view. And I think that you'll find some very core issues cannot be negotiated in the center. I understand the need for a more civil discourse, but I think that what's happening is when the candidates are polling on each line of every speech to find out what Americans think about things before they say it, then it robs us of the ability to have that discourse about the death penalty, for example, or about any number of issues. And what happens after that is that voters become more apathetic, not only in the political process, but in their neighborhood associations.
Do you think that we've started to confuse the term civil and centrist?
Yes, I do. I do. And I understand how it emerged, but I would, if I could...
Well, how did it emerge?
Well, I think it emerged in 1985 when the Democratic leadership Council got together and thought, well, we're not going to be able to win elections on the old Democratic left, and we're going to have to redefine ourselves to appeal to more people. And it was a marketing job, basically. I mean, who wouldn't want to be called a moderate? Who wouldn't want to be seen as independent thinker or nonpartisan or less partisan? They did a good job.
Let's go to Paul in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment that I think that the term centrist politics is sort of a media-created term, and that, in fact, I think there are still deep divisions between the party, but that perhaps the mainstream media takes more enjoyment in sort of highlighting the personal, personalities involved and really exploring the deep issues on healthcare, education, the environment. And if you look at both parties, there's still extreme division on that. So I guess I just take issue with the premise. I'll just take my comment off the air.
Well, hang around. She might have a follow-up question for you there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a question in what he was saying, Georgia Sorensen?
Well, I do think the media has done less than a good job of really opening up the issues for people. But I think the candidates, I agree with you, that the candidates do have very different points of view about many, many things. But even your language, Paul, you talked about that there's really a deep division, you know, which is a kind of frightening prospect for most people to talk about what divides us or divisions, whereas they really are legitimate points of view on the left and right, which should be discussed openly. And that's what I would like.
Well, you know, I'm confused. You know, we are using some, we're throwing around so many of these terms. For instance, the division in this country. Are we divided or are we polarized?
Well, I think that that's a good question. I think mostly we're stuck in the middle, and the middle is neither polarized nor divided. We're this big glob of so-called swing voters who can be influenced by messages that don't really get at the core issues or state truthfully what the core issues are.
Let's go to Gen Z in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's an interesting show. I'm calling because I have a couple of very serious concerns with what the guest is saying. First of all, she talks about a correlation between centrism and bipartisanship, and there may be, but I fail to see that she has given us any evidence that centrism causes bipartisanship or the other way around, and to say two things like that are correlated doesn't mean the same thing as that one causes the other. So I haven't seen evidence for that. Secondly, I think to say that centrists are voters who can be easily influenced by one side or the other and don't stop to think about core values, that's a mistake and overgeneralization. That is just not so. I and most of the people that I associate with are centrist, and it seems to me that, on the contrary, we take time to think critically about issues presented by two or more sides of an issue and figure out exactly where we stand by consideration of the evidence on both sides. And I also believe that it's actually, people who are too partisan on one issue or another are the ones that basically just blindly go along with what their party wants and don't stop to think for themselves.
Well, now, Gen Z, I want to ask you, you've identified yourself as a centrist. Define that term.
And I didn't hear the guest do that either. To me, a centrist is someone who is not extreme on issues for the most part. Someone who, for example,
Now, Gen Z, I'm going to stop you. How do you feel about the death penalty?
I don't support it.
Okay. Now, wouldn't someone who supports it see that as an extreme view?
Not necessarily.
Okay. We're going to turn to Georgia Sorensen. Lots to respond to there.
Yeah. I think Jendy raised some very interesting questions which have to do with how the idea of moderation has been literally sold to the American people. And I think the correlation I was talking about was not between bipartisanship and centrism, but bipartisanship and apathy among the public. And, of course, when you have, many, many variables that impact on phenomena. You can't say one is correlated to the other. But I have to say I was really struck by a study that I was a part of. I was a part of a Pew Commission that elicited 22 studies on civic participation, and they included things like whether people voted, whether they got involved in an election, whether they went to a neighborhood association, whether they joined a union, any kind of civic participation, whether they had dinner with a neighbor even. And in the 22 studies with 1,000 Americans, which were done by, you know, very competent social scientists, you know, with all the statistical tools, found that ever since 1985, apathy in this country has decreased dramatically. And I have to say, well, what happened? It's been declining since Watergate, but in 1985 on, it's just like looks like a cliff.
Now, apathy has been decreasing or increasing?
Apathy has been increasing.
Okay.
Civic participation has been declining, excuse me.
All right. And you, how do you trace this to centrism?
Well, it's impossible to know that, but when you look at the data, you see that something happened in 1985 in which all the data plunged. And that's my hypothesis. It's only a hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there is a relationship between apathy and centrism.
Let's go to Anne in Bloomington. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just have a question for your author. Who do you think will win or maybe fare the best in the environment that you're looking for, Republicans or Democrats? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Are you talking about who will win the presidential election? Is that what you're talking about?
I think yes. I think that in terms of who would be, what administration, what party would be in power.
Well, my point of view was I don't think it would really matter, quite honestly, because the election has been run with centrist messages trying to garner the swing voters in the center, and so that the passion of the positions of people on the left and right, and I know people don't even like the words left and right anymore, or conservatism or liberalism, but those are proud traditions in this country that have points of view that elicit people's strong feelings and passions and ideas. And so I'm concerned that both candidates have run such centrist campaigns that although there are differences in their points of view and policies, for sure, they won't have the mandate or the followership, because the followership never was targeted in their elections.
Let's go to Jennifer. She's calling us from Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning, Jennifer.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to say that I found this a very frustrating election because I know a lot of people who didn't vote or voted for a third-party candidate or had trouble up until the last minute deciding who to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
And I found there to be a big difference with the candidates. So I kept asking people, you know, what's going on? And I kept hearing it's a coin toss or it's a decision between Coke and Pepsi. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate your bringing up this perception, the way the two candidates sort of push the perception of themselves towards the middle and resulting just, I don't know, confusion and apathy.
Okay, thanks.
That's exactly right. I think a lot of people didn't see a dramatic difference between the two, and they positioned themselves. I mean, toward the end, Gore was talking about, well, you know, he believed in guns in some circumstances or for hunting or whatever, and maybe, I'm sure he does, you know. Bush, of course, you know, prevaricated or moved around abstractly about his position on abortion. I would rather they just told us what they believed in, and we voted. Nothing wrong with that.
You know, neither party has the votes in Congress to pass major legislation without some sort of support from the other side. So wouldn't that argue that we do, that we're going to arrive at centrist legislation and that we're, in fact, going to need that just to be able to cross party lines and get anything done?
But I'm afraid we'll get legislation like Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Is Don't Ask, Don't Tell based on core values or strongly held principles of democracy? No, it's a useless, watered-down, centrist, compromised approach that will not only not take us anywhere, it'll probably endanger lots of people. And I'm afraid that's the kind of legislation we're going to get.
On the other hand, what were we going to come up with when the two sides on that particular, when just talking about gays in the military, people felt so strongly about that, what kind of solution would we ever have?
I believe in strong, principled leadership and taking the heat. And I'm I might have a point of view about that particular issue. I do. But I would rather that there were strong, principled points of view and that the country decided to either elect someone or not elect someone or support someone or not support someone. And when that person's time is done or that party's time is done, then the other party recalibrates the country by presenting their points of view, more like the British system.
All right. Now, tell me, where is this person going to come from?
Well, I think that there are amazing, strong, principled leaders at the grassroots level. I've been hearing a lot about, in Minnesota, this group called the Blandin Foundation that has wonderful grassroots leadership efforts. And, you know, I think that, that there are people out there, but I think that we need to find them and support them.
Let's go to Gary in Minneapolis. Gary, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you.
Yes.
I want to make a point, and in order to illustrate it, I'll kind of give you a little quick anecdote of a conversation that I had with some friends of mine who, before the election, were flirting with the idea of voting for Ralph Nader. And it kind of went something along these lines. I would say, you know, Ralph Nader is truly a candidate who would represent somebody who would be definitely left of center in comparison to Al Gore and George Bush. And then I would say, I don't think his chances of winning are very strong or high at all. I said, and the reason is because the votes, the majority of votes in the country are in the middle. And I would say something to the effect, how would you expect a candidate like Ralph Nader to be able to even come close to winning if the country is in the middle and he's in the left? And likewise, you could argue similarly the same thing in regard to Pat Buchanan. I mean, if he's taking positions that are far to the right of the center, how would he gain enough majority votes? How would he appeal to a large enough number of voters to ever gain a majority?
Well, I think that you raise a very good point, Gary, and what I'm proposing is not that we look for people on the extreme left or right, although I find them very interesting myself because I think that they're freed up of all the needs to be elected and can speak their mind. Okay, I think they're interesting folks and they think they help the debate. But I think you can craft a center-left or a center-right campaign that would bring in stronger proponents of some of the issues we're talking about, rather than hitting dead center and then trying to pick up 25% on the left and 25% on the right. You could craft a center-left or center-right campaign.
We are talking to Georgia Sorensen. She is the author, co-author of Dead Center, Clinton Gore Leadership and the Perils of Moderation. She's also a senior scholar at the James McGregor Burns Academy of Leadership at the University of Maryland. We also invite you to join this conversation. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities. It's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. We're going to try and turn now to Greta Cunningham. We're hoping she's standing by with the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.
Yes, I am. Good morning. A Democratic lawyer says he doesn't think there's any question that the law was violated in the handling of 15,000 absentee ballots in Florida's Seminole County. Gerald Rittren made that claim in his opening statements this morning in Tallahassee, where Democrats are challenging those absentee ballots, most of which were votes for Bush. He says when Republican officials wrote voter ID numbers on absentee ballot applications, they did so with the goal of gaining unfair advantage over the Democrats. In response, Bush campaign attorney Daryl Bristow accused Democrats of trying to disenfranchise 15,000 voters. A similar case challenging 10,000 absentee ballots in Martin County is underway in another Tallahassee courtroom. U.S. officials say more than 29 deaths have been reported in the government's investigation of Firestone Tires, including 4 deaths since the company recalled millions of tires in August. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration now has reports of 148 deaths involving tread separations, blowouts, and other problems involving Firestone Tires. That's up from 119 deaths reported as of October 17th. Bridgestone Firestone officials recalled more than 6 million tires this summer due to reports of accidents connected to tire blowouts. Yemen's prime minister says at least 3 people in Yemen are headed to trial in the deadly attack on the USS Cole. The prime minister says as many as 6 people could be tried next month in connection with the bombing attack. The incident killed 17 American sailors. In regional news, former President Bush is continuing his recovery from hip replacement surgery at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. Hospital officials say Bush's surgery went well yesterday, and he will remain hospitalized for a few more days. Bush is 76 years old. The forecast for Minnesota calls for cloudy skies with light snow and flurries in northern and eastern Minnesota. It'll be mostly cloudy in the south and west. Highs today ranging from 5 above in the north to around 20 in the southwest. At this hour, Duluth reports cloudy skies and 5 above, some light snow in Rochester and 14 degrees. It's snowing in St. Cloud, a temperature of 17. And in the Twin Cities, some light snow is falling, a temperature of 16 degrees. That's a check on the latest news.
Hello, I'm Bill Kling, president of Minnesota Public Radio. Your response during our recent membership drive was very strong, and the result is that we're on track thus far to have a balanced budget for the year. Some of you who called made it clear that you could do more and that you'd like to know more about long-term support of Minnesota Public Radio. This is a good time of year to consider gifts of appreciated stock. Taking a deduction for a stock gift to MPR can be a very effective strategy. You can join the builders of MPR who have made the major gifts that have helped us grow to the level of service that we now provide and make sure that that service continues to grow and improve in the future. If you're interested in restricting a major gift for a special project, we'd be happy to visit about that. And if you'd like more information about making a stock gift, particularly before the end of the tax year, please call Katie at 651-290-1216 or visit our website at minnesotapublicradio.org. Again, thanks for partnering with us to make great radio.
I'm Catherine Lanfray. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. Want to remind you that Monday evening is the next edition of our broadcast book club, Talking Volumes. It's a partnership we have with the Star Tribune and the Loft Literary Center. Our author this month is Ellen Gilchrist. She's coming up from the Delta to join us on a snowy evening in St. Paul. Join us. We'll be at the Fitzgerald Theater this Monday, December 11th, 6:45 p.m. Want to have you in your chair at the Fitz by 6:45 p.m. for an evening of conversation with Ellen Gilchrist. She'll do some reading. We'll answer your questions about her life and her work. Doesn't that sound like fun? Yeah, come on. It's Monday, December 11th. 6:45 p.m. at the Fitzgerald Theater. If you need more information, take a gander at our website, minnesotapublicradio.org. You can look at the Talking Volumes icon. Just click on that. We hope to see you on Monday. Meanwhile, we hope to continue this conversation with you this morning. We're talking to Georgia Sorensen. She's the co-author of Dead Center, Clinton Gore Leadership, and The Perils of Moderation. She's a senior scholar at the James McGregor Burns Academy of Leadership at the University of Maryland. And we're talking to her about how centrism has affected American politics. She says that middle-of-the-road politics has gotten us into this mess we're in now. What do you think? Do you see a link between centrism and apathy? It's 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. Let's go to Frank in Minneapolis. Frank, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello.
Hi, Frank.
Oh, hi. My question concerns Ralph Nader, and since his message was very, very, you know, left of center, would there be a way of, like, quantifying how effective his message is? And, for example, comparing how much money he spent versus how many votes he got, and then comparing that to Gore's and Bush and even Harry Brown, Libertarian campaign. And that might show how effective a center campaign is or how effective a non-center campaign is. And the question for your guest is, has there been any studies of that sort? Or would this even be an effective study?
Yeah, I don't know of any studies yet, but I think it is a very interesting premise. We do know whenever Gore moved left, he picked up votes, but it's almost as if he gets afraid and moves back to the center, or maybe his pollsters tell him to move back to the center. And Clinton had that problem, too. Every time he tapped to one side or another, his pollsters would ram him back in the middle. And yet there was more support, more dialogue even, when he would move off the center, Don.
Let's go to Mark in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My comment is that I think the notion that a person's political, I guess, set of views falls on a line is an oversimplification, and I guess the language that we traditionally use reinforces this, such as Nader is left of Gore, is left of Bush, is left of Buchanan, say. And I think the idea that you can take a person's political standpoint and project it onto a line limits our I guess, discussion. And I was wondering if your guests could comment on this, please.
Well, I think that's a very interesting point of view, and there are these movements of younger folks in particular who talk about and write about beyond left and right, and, you know, we're going to move forward, we're not going to move either to the left or right. And I think that's an interesting premise, but there are many issues which are yay or nay issues. I just don't know how to not have a linear position about the death penalty or abortion or a number of other really important issues. So I like your point a lot. I hope you keep developing it, and I'd like to hear more from you.
All right. Let's go to Annie in Roseville. Annie, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Catherine. Georgia, I couldn't agree more with you. And I personally see what you're saying reflected in academics. And I'm fascinated by the timeline. I was working in the education system in the 1980s, and I noticed a distinct change around 86, 87, as we started taking away the passion for achievement because we were trying to make everybody alike and everybody similar and not letting anybody win or lose. And as we've approached this system in academics, we've lost a passion for learning in our youth. We've seen test scores go down. And I think overall it's passion is a part of human nature, whether it's your political beliefs, your religious beliefs, your educational beliefs. And that by voiding ourselves of the passion, that we have nullified and produced an apathetic society.
I think that's great. I'd love to study that more. It's kind of like you're proposing we're becoming kind of tapioca in our effort to mitigate the differences. And I think that there's some truth to that. I also think that we live in an anti-leadership environment. I think as much as, you know, we talk about the checks and balances and how important they are, and of course they are important, but they also keep us from leading. And they were designed to keep presidents from leading in particular. And it's very hard to lead when you have all kinds of checks and balances at the national level and at the local level, and perhaps even in the school system level, if we're to believe Annie, in which to lead.
We are talking to Georgia Sorensen. She is co-author of Dead Center, Clinton Gore Leadership and the Perils of Moderation. We'd like to know what perils of moderation you see in this post-election wrangling. Are we becoming a tapioca nation? What does this divided election tell us about middle-of-the-road politics? It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. We'll return to Georgia Sorensen in just a moment. We'd like, however, to take a few of your calls here. We're going to go to Frank. He's calling us from Superior. Frank, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. The point that I would like to make is that by the standards of the industrialized world, America has, in fact, two right-wing political parties, and what's being described as centrism here is the small gap between those two right-wing parties. Perhaps what is needed is a social democratic party of some kind which would actually represent those people who feel disenfranchised. It would increase the turnout and maybe get rid of what is being defined as centrism, which I would challenge whether that in fact is centrism.
All right. Georgia Sorensen, any reaction to what Frank was saying, that basically what we have here are two right-wing parties and there's a little gap between the two and we call that centrism?
Well, I don't know if that's completely true, although I didn't know if the caller was from England or not, and I've just come back from there looking at some of the phenomena that's going around Tony Blair and centrism, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there are decided points of view that are out there that have not been elicited. In fact, they're dampening down. In fact, I want to say that I, as a younger scholar, I never imagined that I would be interested in centrism. And when James McGregor Burns, who's a senior scholar and Pulitzer Prize winner, National Book Award, some of you all remember, you know, The Lion and the Fox, great, great biography of Roosevelt,
mm-hmm.
told me 7 years ago that the issue would be centrism around the Clinton presidency, I was totally crestfallen. I thought centrism would be a boring topic to study. It didn't elicit my passion. But I have to say, and I also thought that, that Clinton would be an amazingly interesting leader to study, which is why I wanted to write the book. But I have to say, over 6 or 7 years of study and 200 or more interviews, including all the principals, I've come to see it very strongly that this is a very dangerous phenomenon that we need to address.
I think it's interesting that it is not an American phenomenon. Talk for a minute about what you saw in England, and I suspect that you're also seeing it in Germany as well.
Germany and Italy, for sure. I think that there is a real tendency to go to the middle, and what's so interesting in a variety of these countries, this idea of the third way, is that the issues are all different. What's in common is the desire to, in an incremental way, try to move agendas forward slowly by any means possible. But there's no commonality of ideology or points of view about positions or policies between the countries. So that makes me think it's more of a tool than it is an actual point of view.
Let's go to Doug in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you. Well, my thoughts on being a centrist is a bit different than your guess. I don't think being a centrist means that you're wishy-washy on a particular topic. I think it means that you could hold a variety of views that may come from different political parties. So if you're a conservative who also cares about the environment, the rules tell you that you can't do that. Or if you're a liberal who cares about a conservative fiscal policy, the rules tell you you can't do that. So when you take from each political party, then that the only category left for you is to be a centrist. So the idea that it keeps coming up that, well, you can't be a centrist because what are you going to do on capital punishment, that may not be the case.
All right. Georgia Sorensen?
I would love a electorate that felt like they could make independent, strong points of view and pick and choose from various political philosophies and act on them. But what we're finding is it's more of a incremental give and take apathetic electorate which doesn't elicit participation in our government and leaves us prey to charismatic leaders. So I take your point. That would be ideal if people could feel that way and act that way, but it doesn't happen to be the case.
In whose campaign was more centrist, do you think?
Well, I think that they were both equally centrist. I hate
really?
To say it. I mean,
hmm.
We look at the if we look at the election, I think it's not an accident that we're split down the middle in so many different areas. I think that the campaign consultants are very, very good at calibrating the center, and I don't think that either candidate is a center candidate, by the way, but both are willing to go there to win.
Let's go to Jim in Sioux Falls. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I think the discussion's really good, and I like her comments. I am passionate about my politics, and just to relate a little bit, back when McCain was running in the primary against Bush, I think the discussion was always how far right should Bush go, because McCain assumed some more centrist positions, for instance, on campaign finance reform. And I think Bush overwhelmingly won the primary because of his less centrist views. And then, of course, we can always debate just how far to the center he came when he ran against Bush. But I like the passion, and you can't be passionate and still be a centrist, I think.
My point exactly.
All right, we're going to go to Dan in Minneapolis. Dan, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thanks for taking my call, Catherine. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to see that you're actually addressing this topic. I'm a former political activist in a major political party and have become disaffected and voted for Nader this year for much of the same reason that your guest has been discussing, that it's a dead center, precisely. Part of the reason I think what is going on here, what I've noticed more and more, especially with the Democratic Party since the 80s when I first got involved, is that there's a lot more corporate money that's very apparent there. It's not kind of hidden like it was. Like this year, the Democratic Convention was sponsored by AT&T, for example. Mm-hmm. And what I think it is, I mean, not to sound like a paranoid conspiracy theorist who puts tinfoil on his windows and whatnot, but I think what it is that it's a way that the big money doesn't want to make waves. They like to keep things in the status quo, and so they buy off the political parties with the way they buy elections and the way they buy representatives and senators, is to keep people apathetic about the political situation and steer their activism more toward community service type things where they feel they can still make a difference, but in a way kind of take control of the government out of the hands of the people that actually it belongs to and keep it controlled by these corporate interests who keep on churning out these apathetic voters who keep on pulling the lever for the evil of the two lessers, basically, every year, mm-hmm. is what it seems like to me. And I think that's more alarming than anything, as opposed to, having a mushball middle, which I think is frightening, of course, but the thought that our government is kind of being taken away from us, and we're being pushed away from, oh, don't worry about that voting thing, it doesn't make any difference anyway, because they're both the same thing.
Well, Dan, you don't sound disaffected to me. You sound like you're a really thoughtful citizen who has a lot of passion about these issues. And you know what? I think you're right. And I think it would be great for someone to write a book, because I think the more the big money is involved, the more candidates feel like they can't speak clearly about some of their issues, for example, prescription drugs, for example. And I'm sure that it dampens the candidate's ability to really be truthful. So I would like to take away that hinderer of democracy, too. And I hope that you'll keep working on campaign finance reform.
All right, let's go to Scott in Fargo. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thanks, Catherine. To me, when we're talking about the center, I guess almost by definition we're speaking of the middle class. And I would argue that the candidate's appeals to the middle class are appeals to self-interest. Some folks have said that it's voter apathy, but I would say it's not voter apathy, but rather that voters care deeply about their own self-interest. During the campaign, both Gore and Bush constantly pandered to the middle class, and now some callers have spoken of Ralph Nader as being too far left. To me, it's not that Nader was too far left, but that he dared not to pander to the middle class and dared to call Americans to support policies that are best for powerless people on the planet. That's all I had.
Okay, thanks, Scott. Any reaction, George?
Well, sure. I think that's a very good point of view. I think that, I'm 52, and I think people that are younger than I am haven't had really the experience of strong presidential leadership. We've seen this kind of incremental leadership for a long time, and I think those of us who are a little bit older remember passionate leaders. I don't remember FDR, but I've certainly seen a lot of tapes and read his histories, of course, and here's a person who, roared in front of a New York crowd. I welcomed their hatred when he was talking about the capitalists. How many times have we seen that in the last, half a century? We have Wilson, who fought to the death for the League of Nations. He didn't win, but he didn't give up. We have women suffragists who worked for 100 years to win the right to vote. And that's the kind of leadership that I think is nascent in the American public and I'd like to bring back.
Let's go to Peg in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning. Hello, Peg?
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air.
Okay, this is a great show, and I agree completely with your guest. I also agree with the recent caller who said he voted for Nader because he was disaffected with the political parties. I'm not a centrist. I hold very far-left views. My question for your guest is, are you familiar with Jim Hightower's book, There's Nothing in the Middle of the Road but Yellow Stripes and Dead Armadillos, and do you have any comment on it? And I'll hang up and listen.
Well, Jim has this amazing populist capacity to, just kind of frame the issue, and I think that Dead Armadillos is a frame for the issue.
We're going to go to Jim in Rochester. Whoops, there we go. Jim, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more of a centrist approach to politics to keep situations more tolerable within families, because politics change as you age, okay? Younger people are more liberal and the older people are more conservative. And then also, as far as the business structure goes, I like companies who promote activity in politics as far as voting, but not to let it enter into the structure of infighting within a company. And I think that sometimes when you have polarization in politics, it pulls good companies apart, and it also pulls good families apart. I'll give you an example. In the Reagan family, I think President Reagan was a good example of a great president and his structure, and yet he still had problems within his own family.
You know, Jim, I have to tell you, I'm not getting your point here.
I think that going for centrist point of viewing does not rip apart good families, and it doesn't rip apart good companies just based on political structure.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
I think I get Jim's point of view, and people see centrism as a place of more harmony and less partisan strife. And I think we as a country are afraid of conflict. We've been kind of sold the idea that the conflict is something to be avoided or mediated or resolved. And I believe in the conflict of ideas, not the conflict of personalities, which the press can get into sometimes, but the conflict of ideas. They're fairly rich traditions of the conflict of ideas. And I think that if we don't have those conversations, and if we fear conflict, then we're going to continue having this the situation we're talking about.
We're talking to Georgia Sorensen. She's co-author of Dead Center, Clinton Gore, Leadership and the Perils of Moderation. She's also a senior scholar at the University of Maryland at their James McGregor Burns Academy of Leadership. Does centrism lead to apathy? Did middle-of-the-road politics and campaigning leave us with this election mess? It's 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Let's go to Jim in Maple Grove. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
I just have one point. I consider myself to be a centrist, but definitely not apathetic. I think that centrists could also be people who disagree with some of the things that the Republican Party stand for and disagree with some of the things that the Democratic Party stand for. They also agree with some of their positions, too. What I don't like is the kind of politician who is acting almost like a religious zealot, who is so committed to their cause that there is no compromise. There is no real discussion. You can't be won over in an argument. You can only be converted, you know. And I do think that a lot of people are elected that are to the right or left of the center by substantial margins, but they tend to be in the Congress and the Senate where one person is not in charge, where you have a mix and a dialogue. So I'll take my comment off the air. Thanks.
Well, the point I'm concerned about is that a situation we have now in which there's so much targeted at the center and there's so many people that and civic participation has gone down and so forth, that it's ripe for a charismatic leader that you're talking about, because that's exactly the kind of environment that leadership scholars look at when they look at the emergence of charismatic leaders.
Let's go to Tom in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, this is Tom. I could not disagree more with your guests.
Okay.
The notion that one has to be on the political extreme to have some sort of passionate view, I think that's just plain absurd. And there's no reason to correlate, you know, deviance with passion or with a sincerity. I noticed, for instance, that this guest has been arguing all hour for passion and what seems like partisanship. Why hasn't she addressed which extreme she's on that leads her to this conclusion?
What do you mean by extreme?
Well, she's obviously not in the middle, because that would be wishy-washy.
I see. All right, Georgia, the gauntlet has been thrown.
I think I appreciate the two callers that have talked about people thinking independently, and I also try to think independently about issues. I've gone against the grain in many, many issues. For example, I am totally opposed to the death penalty, and now I see that the country is moving toward, you know, more supporting my point of view, which is great, but, you know, for a long time I was with the 5% of people who was thoroughly opposed to the death penalty in all circumstances. So so I have strong points of view about issues. I have been a Democrat. I thought about becoming an independent until I wrote this book. I have voted many times for Republican candidates also. In my district, we have a very interesting Republican moderate woman candidate, woman congressperson.
Well, now, here, I don't understand. If she's moderate, how can she be any good?
Well, that's a good point. And quite frankly, I didn't vote for her this time because there were issues that made a big difference to me in terms of this next congressional session. So she won in our district year after year because, which is a Democratic district, by the way, because she was able to walk the line. But I think that many of us were finally had a really strong Democratic candidate who was able to forward issues that we really cared about, that we knew she would support.
Let's go to Annette in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
My comment was that I just agree with Georgia, and I was trying to figure, kind of put this all in perspective, because I had been listening to Pat Buchanan, and I was quite refreshed by his clear, decisive comments on issues, and then I was kind of frightened at the same time that I was agreeing, or I was refreshed by someone that was, in my mind, so right. And I just thought, well, that's because you just don't hear anyone anymore, hardly ever come out on a, yeah, I agree or I disagree with this issue.
All right. Thanks, Annette.
One of the most interesting days I spent was with Newt Gingrich hashing out some issues. And, you know, here's the person who has very strong points of view. And they're not ones generally that I would agree with. But I could see how important it was to have the opposition have strong points of view so that I could sharpen my points of view.
If centrism isn't the panacea to the evils of partisanship, to rancor and division, what is?
I think leadership and followership.
Now, you keep using this word leadership. I think we need to define it here.
Well, I believe in leadership which is intended and planned and articulated and stood by and measurable and durable. So very concrete results. And finally, based on very core values that don't waver. And I think most leadership is not based on core values. For example, I'm sure there is never a time in which I'm going to feel differently about the death penalty and a number of other issues. So, but I think leadership is interactive with followership. In fact, I don't even know if I like the word followership, because great presidents create great social movements. They create great opposition movements. They create energy and enthusiasm and passion in the so-called followers, both the opposition and the supporters.
Georgia Sorensen, we're down to seconds here. Tell us what kind of leaders you think our two would-be presidents are. Succinctly.
Yeah. Well, I think whoever wins this election will assume the office, the charisma of the office of the presidency, and they'll do relatively well. But I'm looking toward 2004, and I hope that citizens in Minnesota in particular will not give up on the process, will reexamine their views, will look at centrism with a new point of view, and get re-engaged, re-involved. We need your energy and your ideas.
Okay. Georgia Sorensen, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Catherine.
All right. Georgia Sorensen is a scholar at the University of Maryland. We've been talking to her about centrism. We want to remind you that if you've missed any mid-morning shows for the last week, you can find